Hey guys, my name is Crystal Kenny, and I'm in love with creating. All things artistic and imagination involved. I'm an American girl who chased her creative dreams all the way to Paris, France, making a living using photography. This podcast takes you inside the stories of all the artsy folks I've met along the way and gives you that extra push to discover your creative gifts. The desire to create is deeply inside each and every one of us, and I give you the tools and inspiration to find a new way of living a more creative life. This is La Vie Creative, the podcast. Author and travel expert Donnie Bilo is a true Francophile at heart. She's famous for creating the innovative website Girl's Guide to Paris, and she now runs regular tours around the world that are designed to bring women together. So welcome to the show, Donnie. It's so good to have you here. I've known you for quite some time now. You were one of the first people I was introduced to when I moved to Paris in 2012, so it's really cool to chat with you today.
Likewise. So lovely.
And I want to talk a little bit about your background. I know you run the famed website Girl's Guide to Paris. Can you talk a little bit about what you did before and what led you to what you do now?
Sure. It seems like every decade I have a new career. Hopefully this is the last one, but who knows? My first job was in the film business. I used to produce television commercials and music videos, took some time off to help to raise my kids with my husband. And then I got involved in politics and not-for-profit work. And then when I got tired of saving the world, which is super exhausting, which people who are trying to do that right now are aware of, I decided just to do a total passion project, and that resulted in Girl's Guide to Paris.
Wow. So Girl's Guide to Paris was kind of like relaxed time for you after saving the world. It was like, let's do something a little more soft and happy.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, because I was on Obama's National Finance Committee. I helped start a not-for-profit in South Africa, kids with HIV. I worked in the environmental world, all of which is very exciting and upsetting and, you know, all of the above. And you meet really cool people. But I thought, you know, travel is really what makes me happy. And Of course, France is really what makes me happy. So why not do something that's going to make me a little bit happier? Because I hopefully makes you live longer too, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. We gotta take care of our mentality with everything going on right now.
And so true.
You had visited France many times. You had connections there. So that was how you came to start Girl's Guide to Paris. You were thinking, okay, I know some of the best spots. I know some of the best people. Was that how that came about?
Well, actually, I had a conversation with a friend of mine who was in the book publishing business. She was a children's book editor. And I think it was at that time still, we had an apartment in Paris in the sixth that we bought in the year 2000. And we had that for about 6 years. So I think I started thinking about this back then, or could have been right after we sold the apartment. I don't remember exactly, but we were having this conversation. I was saying, I'm sick of politics and not-for-profit work. It's so exhausting. And I'm just burnt out. I said, well, wouldn't it be cool to like write a book about Paris? You know, I have my Paris, and everybody has their own Paris, you know, their own vision of this magical place. She said, well, what about Girl's Guide to Paris? Because she had come with me on a girl's trip. And I used to do girl's trips just with my friends coming to stay at the apartment and, you know, showing them around town. And, you know, we'd spent quite a bit of time there in the summers and holidays and whenever I could. And so that sort of, she came up with the whole name of it. And then I had a friend who was in the publishing, who still is in the publishing business. He's kind of a big agent, discovered John Grisham and so forth, and used to be the head of Doubleday. So I was like, oh, this is my book idea. And he's like, forget it. Nobody's ever going to publish you. Who the hell are you, basically? you know, some woman who's in a bookshop, you know, thinks this. So I thought, well, I'll just start a website. How hard could that be? And, you know, 9 months later, or maybe a year later after coming up, the idea originally was to have a content site. And it was harder than birthing the two babies that I have now grown up. Putting together, it's certainly at that time, before there was like these super easy plug and play template websites. It was very intense and very difficult.
Much more grueling. It wasn't just like a Wix site where it's like, oh, I like the color pink. Here's my whole website.
Exactly. That was 11 years ago now. So yeah, it took a while.
Yeah. And it's grown to be a great group. I mean, I've met some really interesting people through Girls Guide to Paris. And also, I love reading what's on there. And now you do tours as well. So it's all kind of organically come together. And it sounds like you used creativity as a type of healing. Do you agree that creativity is kind of a healing thing for most people?
I agree. I think it's not only healing. For me, it's like a life force. It's the life force. Anything creative, and I expand that to include anything beautiful, you know, anything. Cooking can be creative. Coming up with and putting together a business, entrepreneurial idea like this or anything else is super creative. I didn't used to think that when I was young. I used to, you know, I majored in theater in LA when there was no theater in the 80s. It was absurd. But I thought of creative as a sort of narrow thing. And I think it's much, much bigger. You know, creativity is, you know, inventing something. It's working with your hands or with your brain or with your heart, but it's definitely has to have passion behind it. And I think passion and being excited and creating something, whether that is, you know, perhaps a vaccine for this dreaded disease or, you know, a painting, I think all of that can be creative. But I think that in that creation, in that moment of creativity, you kind of forgotten about yourself. And I think that's why people find it intoxicating. And in that way, it's healing because you're not just so stuck in your brain thinking in this linear way. You become sort of part of they talk about it, the flow, right? And that is certainly when I write blog articles or wrote the book that I wrote, or even just coming up with tours, whatever, that is part of that creative process. And to me, it's just, I couldn't live without it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And it's kind of like a way to escape our egos, I think is what you're saying.
Yes, totally. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. And you've also written a lot about France, obviously, and a book called Paris Cocktails. Can you talk a little bit about your process in writing?
That was a fun email to open. One day I got an email saying, would you like to write a book called Paris Cocktails from this small publisher called Cider Mill Press up in Maine. He used to be with Simon & Schuster, and now he does just gift books. And it actually started a whole series. So there's Paris Cocktails, London Cocktails, New York Cocktails. We were the first one. And my first response was, well, I like a martini, but I'm certainly no cocktail expert. And I actually suggested someone else either write it or write it with me, who is an expert on that. Her name is Forrest Collins. She's goes by the most amazing handle of all time, which is @52martinis. And she had written some articles for our website, which I think is why they got the idea of contacting me. Anyway, she was too busy with working on her own project. So I had to sit in Paris for 6 weeks and go to bars every night. And it was, I know, I think you came out with us.
We did. Yeah. I had a great time that night.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it does sound a little bit more fun than it was. It was super fun. I luckily had an apartment, a place that we have now by that time, because otherwise it would have been cost prohibitive, because it, you know, writing a book is not the quickest way to riches unless you are John Grisham. But you know, when you go to 3 cocktail bars a night for 6 nights a week, after the first week, you think, oh my God, this actually is work. So
drinking is hard.
Drinking is hard. And the reason why I'm still alive and not in, you know, waiting for a liver transplant is I came up with a practice, because the first night I did drink all 3 cocktails. The idea was we go to each bar. I had this lovely girl who was like an intern for me to, you know, help make appointments, ask the bartender to serve the most creative, the most ordered, and, you know, a third one of his or her choice. I actually drank them all the first night. And then the next morning I said, oh my gosh, I'm going to be at the American Hospital in Paris by the end of the week, for sure.
This won't work.
Especially, you know, 3 different kinds of, you know, liquors and blah, blah, blah. What I came up with was each cocktail I go to 3 bars a night, and I would try 2 sips of each cocktail. First sip, you really don't get a full handle on it. Second sip, then you can start to discern. You're not spitting at a cocktail bar, obviously. but by the end of the night, you know, you've had basically a cocktail and a half, and then I would go out to eat, come back and write. and look at the pictures. Most of them were always too dark because I'm not a photographer, but it worked out that way. And it really was a lot of fun. I did it in like 3 months. It was crazy.
That's a lot of alcohol to consume in 3 months, but also so fun. And I'm glad you came up with a way to survive.
Yes, that was key because, you know, you can't really sell any books if you're, I guess, maybe they would have sold better. Who knows?
I was going to say, I mean, it seems to work that way for some artists. She died
for her cause.
Yeah. What was the most surprising thing you learned by writing a book? What did you not expect?
Well, going back to eighth grade, I think it must have been sophomore year of high school. You know, I got the worst grades in my literature class, in my writing class. And I just thought, I'm not a writer. I am no good at this. I still don't consider myself a real proper writer. I'm certainly never going to sit down and write a novel. But it's something that you can do if someone's, you know, I had to that point, you know, written a lot of blog pieces and posts, and then I did some little bits for like a National Geographic book and stuff like that. But if you bite it off in small chunks, you actually can do it, even if you don't consider yourself the next Fitzgerald.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I had several other writers tell me, you know, write when you can, even if that's 20 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day, like you work it in. And it's funny you don't consider yourself a writer considering you run like the biggest blog and you write on a regular basis.
Well, I guess I do, but it's, you know, I mean, these people that come up with ideas, and I know I'm doing actually a writing retreat later on this year with 3 writers, and it is something, painting and other creative things, that you actually can learn how to do, mm-hmm. even if you don't consider yourself, I don't know, you know, maybe basically it's just like anything, you know, someone told you were not good at it back in, you know, sophomore year, and you hang on to that for as long as you can. Especially being a woman. So mm-hmm. I've got to get over that.
We have that imposter syndrome. Donnie, yes. Get over it. You're a writer. Get over it. So how do you get into your flow state? I know you mentioned flow earlier. And I mean, creatives can very much relate to this. It's kind of like getting into a meditative state. You almost leave your body. You're just in the moment. Yeah. And what are some things that really help you to get into that state?
You know, I never really thought about it before writing that book because I had such a short time. I think I signed the paper, you know, the papers to do it in November, and I had to deliver it by like March 15th or some crazy thing like that. Mm-hmm. So it was really a very short amount of time. So I had to get into that state regardless of whether I wanted to. So sometimes if I was not feeling inspired, I'm one of those people who I can sit down and just like start writing. I don't let anything stop me and I just like go. But usually you need something, you know, some kind of hook. Now, if sometimes when I was really just flat dead, I couldn't think of anything, I really didn't want to do it. Going to a museum and seeing some art, I'm very passionate about art, not of all kinds, but, you know, of a lot of kinds. That sort of feeds that, nourishes that place where this stuff comes from. And I know, you know, people who are much more serious writers than I, it's a really hard thing to figure out where does that come from, you know. But I do think if you have to enrich and feed that in order for wonderful things to come out, which I think kind of makes sense. It's like a plant or anything else. You need to give it sunshine and water. So you got to get out of the house, take a walk, buy some flowers, go to a museum, read someone else's book, you know, something that's going to feed you. That really helps.
Yeah. It almost feels like when you do those things, like you're avoiding what you need to be doing, but actually it kind of is like a kind of like cleans your palate in a way.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, the palate totally. Cleanser for your brain.
Yeah.
What would you say to those people who say, you know, to be creative, it comes from a really focused mind. And then there's the others who say that it's like your soul speaking. You shouldn't think too much. You just do it. I mean, where do you stand on that? Do you think it's more about a focused mind or just, like you said, you don't know where it's coming from?
I think the focused mind comes in the revision period. I think you have to start. There's been a lot of talk about this, and it's also the type of person you are. There are people who can go into a studio and write one of the world's greatest songs in a half an hour, 20 minutes, you know, and then other people, like I was reading, the French singer who wrote Alleluia.
Oh, yeah. What's his name?
Yeah, no, he said he just died not that long ago. Anyway, he went back and back and back and revised and revised and revised. So I am definitely the latter. I have to go into that flow state. I have to just let it all out. And then I'll go back and with that more focused mind. And it really is two different parts of your brain. It feels totally different when you're going through and editing. But it feels like that feels more like cleaning up your room. Mm-hmm. And the first one is like listening to music or dancing or letting, you know, it feels like letting go more mm-hmm. than. So yeah. I would, unless you're writing a scientific paper, I think anything that's going to have any creativity and it's going to have, you have to let go for a little bit of time in order to get that stuff out.
With
correcting like each sentence you've just written, you're stopping it.
Yeah, no, that's completely true. If you're stopping to think too much, then you can't get it out. You know, you just have to get into the flow, like you said. And yeah, it is like cleaning your room afterwards to edit and periods and commas and all that stuff that our flow state was not allowing for. So
that's right. I think, although I enjoy that too. I like that.
Yeah.
I like to see
you're
that.
One of the few. And why do you think France attracts so many creative people?
You know, I think I told you I used to have a online radio show, and I would ask people that question as well as, you know, why Paris? What is it about Paris in particular? I think number one, it's the beauty. Paris, it's hard to make a really strong argument that there's another city that's more beautiful than Paris. It's around every corner. It's jaw-droppingly beautiful. And there's so many places in France that are jaw-droppingly beautiful. But of course, there's other places that are as well. So I think the second part is they went there before you. So you mm-hmm. feel, you know, during, let's say, think about Josephine Baker. When she went in the teens, you know, she was not allowed in, you know, East St. Louis to even sit on a bus or go into the restroom of the white people. And then she gets to France and is allowed to, and it's much freer at that time, you know, in sort of the jazz era. It was kind of a mecca, as was Amsterdam, for more freedom. So she could become the dancer and then the spy and the man, you know, chateau owner and all the things that she then became, even within a time where she wouldn't have had any of that freedom. So I think there was a sense of freedom not only for African Americans, but for everyone. For women think about the things that Gertrude Stein was able to do that she probably would never have been able to do back in the States. So I think that we took our lesson from those who went before us, and this sense of freedom in terms of probably post-revolution. I'm not sure what it was like before that. But talking about the last 100 years or so, there's a lot of writers, authors, filmmakers, photographers, and painters who came before. And then you want to just sort of soak that up, walk on the ground that they did. And somehow that's going to, you know, imbue in you. And therefore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the energy is contagious.
Yeah,
I completely agree. And I feel it is very freeing in a lot of ways. It's you're allowed to play more, and they respect you more for being creative, for being curious and thinking, you know, it's not just about performing. It's about playing a little bit, which is really interesting.
That's true. Yeah. And because you think about it, the government supports art and not just artists that are really amazing, but some people who are just, you know, I mean, I went on a porte ouverte, you know, open gallery tour of Belleville one time in the 20th, and surprised to see that 90% of the artists I didn't think were very good at all, but they're being supported in their pursuit, because as you say, it's correct. You know, the French admire the art of vivre, the art of living. It's not all about money. I mean, it's as simple as that. So they're not considered unimportant because they don't sell their paintings for $200,000 a pop.
Yeah, I think as Americans, that's a really difficult thing for us, because we're so used to producing and productivity, and we feel guilty when we're not on the move making something profitable. So I was talking to another friend about how France is kind of like boot camp for relaxation. It's like teaching us how to relax.
An oxymoron there. Right?
Yes, it's crazy. But I mean, I can't even give a good example without being productive. Like, get to boot camp. So I feel like it's just, you know, ingrained in us. We can't really escape that part of being American. But France is a good therapy for that. It does help.
It definitely does. As a matter of fact, I was talking to my colleague the other day who does a lot of work on these tours with me, and she's leading some now and so forth. And she's been in Paris for 25 years or so. And if you're there for too long, you start getting into the French mentality of, oh, you know, I've already worked 35 hours this week. And it's like, you know, you've got to call this woman back, even though it's 5 o'clock your time.
We need this to happen.
Exactly. And she's like, you're right. I've been in France too long. I'm starting to get infected.
It's like you've been taking that drug so long, you know, it's starting to affect your life.
Exactly. So it's good and bad, depending on how much you need to get done. That's why it's the perfect place for a vacation, for a holiday.
Yes. Come and go, people. Don't take too many drugs.
Yeah.
And do you feel that you choose your passion, or do you think it chooses you?
I think you have to uncover it. I think that if you're sitting there, which I think a lot of us did in our early 20s, and then maybe we do again when we're trying to get back in the workforce after staying home, taking care of kids, or we are having a transition in life where the kids are leaving, or we just got divorced. I mean, there's a lot of different times in your life when you have those transitions, and particularly for women, more so even. I remember sitting there after staying home for a while, trying to pick what I was going to do that was going to fulfill me, right? Wow, that's a heavy thing. You know,
yeah.
I had like a life coach and a shrink and everybody else that I go to this meditation place, you know, every possible way to help. And I just went around in circles. So I think sometimes you have to throw yourself into traffic, you know, and just get out there. If you, especially if you've been home or not working or in some job that you hate for a long time, you know, you need to take some time off in that case, or if you've been taking too much time off and you need to get back in, you just have to start throwing yourself in. And then things, if you're open to it, it will reveal itself. But I don't think it's, you can sit home and take a quiz and figure it out what's going to cause you. But I'm a huge believer in life coaches. I'm actually doing a tour with my life coach, who's one of the first original life coaches in this United States. And she is like life coach to the stars. But that makes her sound like she's just one of the most open, coolest people on earth. And she's the reason why I figured out that I wanted to do this Girl's Guide to Paris. And it cost some money to sit there and spend the whole weekend with her. It was a vision. She calls it a vision day. And it's basically like a strategic retreat for yourself. And she has you do all of these different things to uncover what it is that you are passionate about. And 9 out of 10 times, those things that we love, we assume, and we've already put in a box saying we can't possibly make money at that, going back to the American thing, or there's no possible way that I could do that because of X, Y, you know, you've stopped yourself. So
yeah.
She's also there to say, or he, whoever your life coach, and there's so many people doing the coaching now, well, wait a minute. Yes, you can do it. Let's like look at what are the ways we could do it. So let's start here. And let's think about this. And, you know, and she basically came up with with me a strategic plan, and I followed every single thing in there, you know,
and it worked. Yeah, it worked. I think that is the scariest thing in your life, is to realize and actually pursue what you know you're supposed to do. And we run from that like crazy, even though it can be so fulfilling, but it's terrifying thinking, what if I try this? And I know I'm supposed to be doing this and it doesn't work out.
Well, the worst case scenario is it doesn't work out, but that doesn't mean you're dead. You know, you've tried it. Much, much, much better to have tried something and failed at it than to not try it at all. And then, you know, on your deathbed say, ooh, well, that's too bad, you know?
Yeah. You stop playing it safe. Just go for it. Show up. I think that's been a reoccurring theme in this podcast, is show up, you know? Like people don't even try. You can't win the lotto without buying the ticket, so on. Like just go out and try it. And I'm curious.
And you don't need a PhD. Sorry to interrupt you, but you don't need a PhD to do it. Sometimes, I mean, you know, I have a friend who went back to school and got her master's and a PhD so that she could, you know, she's a lawyer, but so that she could help people, you know, in developing countries. But on the other hand, I just went to Africa, found a girl, you know, we started something, you know, it doesn't need to be, you don't need to know more than anyone else before you start something. You can just fake it till you make it. Yeah. That's the reason that's a cliche, but it's true.
Yeah. A lot of cliches are true. And I think that's a recurring thing too, is people think they need all the lights to be green or all the resources, but you figure it out as you go and things fall into place.
True.
And what's the best advice that you've been given?
That's a tough one because, you know, I feel like every day I learn something new, but my teacher in terms of the most important things in life is a guy named Thich Nhat Hanh, who's a Buddhist, a Vietnamese Buddhist monk. He's actually in his 90s and he's had a stroke and he's no longer teaching, but he did for the last 70 odd years. And he has a place called Plum Village, which is not far from my house in the Bordeaux region. And he, after the Dalai Lama, probably the second most well-known Buddhist monk, writes, has written hundreds and hundreds of books. You can just Google him on YouTube. There's Oprah has interviewed him, you know, like he goes, he's been to Google headquarters and worked with members of Congress. But his teachings are the most Zen, the most basic of Buddhism. And they talk about mindfulness before that was even a word that was in, you know, regular society, but
mainstream.
And I went there to learn how to meditate, but he has a quote, which I think is apropos and really what I try and live by. And it says, "I promise myself that I will enjoy every minute of the day that is given me to live." And he just talks about breathing in and breathing out and being here in the present moment. And that's the only place where you can find peace and happiness and, you know, gratitude, looking around you and seeing what you do have rather than what you don't is the only way to be happy. And for me, that's the best advice there is, to be present and to actually live your life right now.
Yeah. I think that, you know, so many books and writers, and it's all coming back to the same thing, is gratitude. And that's, I think that a good way, and that's why we're talking about this in creativity, is to create is like a direct link to being in the moment, to being like grateful in some ways. It's right there. It's right there next to it. So I think that's why a lot of us are so passionate about creativity, because, you know, maybe you're not good at meditating, maybe you're not good at, you know, being still. Well, creating, you're still moving a little bit, but it's taking you into that state.
It is. It's the same. It that is like meditating. It's sailing is like meditating. Swimming, you know, sports, because you're not thinking in your brain. You're in, oddly, when you think about meditating, you think of it's some super spiritual thing, but it's, you're actually very in your body. I think a lot of us are trying to get out of our bodies all the time, and we're focused in our brains all the time. And that's where all kinds of problems start.
Yeah. That's where the ego takes over.
Exactly.
I love it. And what are some future projects that you're excited about?
Well, I am keeping myself busy at this crazy time in our world. I postponed my spring tours, still have my fall tours on docket, just waiting to see what happens. But I have decided, rather than just being frozen, which I think a lot of people are feeling frozen right now. And what do you do? And especially in the travel business, how, you know, people are never going to travel again, or people are going to travel differently, and all this, you know, doomsday predictions. But I've decided I'm going to go full bore for 2021, put together with either myself or partners or people who are experts in those countries, 25 plus tours for 2021. So, you know, I started just doing tours to France. And the big thing about my tours is that they're always women only. And I always say we start as strangers and we meet as strangers and depart as friends. And that coming together, that bonding is the secret sauce of these tours. And it is magical. And it's something that I kind of just lay a foundation for, but it's the magic of having women together. Women are so good at that and so good at connecting. And it's really cool to see, to witness, and to be a part of. And that's the joy that this business gives me, is to see and be part of that connection. And that's really what the sort of mission of this is all about. And also, when you go on a trip, an adventure, a retreat, a tour somewhere that you've never been, or somewhere that you've never seen in that way, it's when you discover a different place, you also kind of discover a little bit more about yourself. A different way to do something. This is look at, you know, they eat that, and it's actually not bad. Whatever it is, that sense of discovery makes us feel alive. And I think that's why people love to travel. It's why I love to travel. So we're going to Cornwall and Devon. We're going to Mongolia. That's my most far-flung location. We're going to be staying in yurts, which are they call gurs, and milking a yak. Everything from that to going to the Riviera, of course, and having absinthe and learning how to make, you know, the best possible anchois. We're also going to go to Spain to see some of the incredible gardens of Spain. We're going to go to Holland and go riding through the tulip fields when they're in bloom. We've got two African safaris, one tented, all tented safari in Kenya with a third generation Kenyan. Another woman who, and I only partner with women, she is from South Africa. She has a not-for-profit where she does a lot of work with conservation and helping animals. So this one is really an elephant-focused tour, and we actually get to collar elephants. So they, they take them and collar them so they keep track of, you know, declining or hopefully not populations. So that's like really, really special because there's only a few people who do that and that let other people there, come and partake in that. So that's for the animal lovers out there, which seem to be plenty of. But, you know, I've got everything from, you know, retreats in Bali, where we're really learning about the culture there, which is one of my favorite places on earth, learning about wabi-sabi in Japan. So every tour has just been put together with a lot of thought, a lot of passion, a lot of care, a lot of creativity, and always trying to stay in a unique, interesting, beautiful place, have unbelievable meals, but really learn about that culture and to get to know some people there and to not be a tourist.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I mean, I can't imagine the amount of work and time that's gone into planning these. I mean, are you taking all these tours? Are you on all 25?
No, I can't. It would be too much. Because I'm also trying to stay married to my husband.
Yes, you need to see that guy.
Yeah. Who is just so supportive. And he's actually helping me revamp the website. So on June 1st, we're gonna be unveiling the new website and all these tours. I'm so excited about it. And he's really been huge help. He's just, he's a computer whiz. So that really helps.
But
I have 12 of them are being led by other people. Like, obviously I'm going to go on the one in Mongolia because I can't say no to that.
It's exciting.
but obviously I've never been to Mongolia. So we have an on the ground company also started by a woman. She's young and she's going to be taking us around and, you know, really letting us meet some of the nomadic women and what their life is like. Same kind of thing. I found a woman through, involved in some of these women in travel organizations and found a lot of partnerships that way. I've got this really adorable woman named Gloria who's going to do the tour to Ireland, and it's lots of fiddling and pubs and castles and, you know, all of that. So it's such a pleasure to work with other people who are in the same situation, who are really passionate about their corner of the world and, you know, letting other people in on some of those secrets.
Yeah. And it's all about connection at the end of the day, which it sounds like is a theme in your tours, because these women are coming together and out of their comfort zone for sure, which only allows for great things to happen.
So true. So true.
Yeah, I'm really excited for you. And I can't wait to see the new website. It's June 1st, you said.
June 1st. Yeah. So I really want people to make sure they're subscribed to the newsletter because they will find out first about all these tours.
And what is the website and where can people connect to you to get on that newsletter?
Yeah, thank you. It's Girls Guide to Paris, GIRLS Guide. And it's T-O, not the number, paris.com. Mm-hmm. So we started out with Paris, and now, of course, we're all over the world. So it's girlsguidetoparis.com, but then I put in my little logo and beyond. So
I like it.
It gives you an idea of, you know, you can start somewhere and you can really go global. And that's the idea, because it's just, there's so many exciting and interesting places to see and visit and to be a part of that I just, as much as I love Paris, I had to move in every direction from there. But there's always lots and lots of French tours.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited to see where this goes. And I'm happy to hear you're bringing people together from such different backgrounds. I'm really excited to see the pictures from these trips too.
Yeah, exactly. I know we had a fun, there's a bunch of them that are going to be quite photogenic friendly or photo friendly. Obviously all tours are, but mm-hmm. it'd be nice to have you along on every one of them documenting. That'd be fun.
Oh my God, I've signed me up, but beyond the point. Thank you so much. Thanks for talking to me, Dani. I love hearing from you, and you're always doing something different and evolving, and it's just really inspiring to see.
Well, congratulations to you and this podcast and your book and your wedding, and oh my gosh, you've got a great year ahead of you too. We have to think positive. This too shall pass.
Exactly. I think that's a great note to end on, and I'll talk to you soon.
Great.
Thanks so much for tuning in to La Vie Creative. You can find more information on missparisphoto.com. And if you enjoyed this show, please feel free to share and spread the word for all my creative guests. We have the power to help them to keep doing what they love. See you next time.